This is a podcast from ABC Overnights.
I'm guessing that this next voice is very familiar to you. Jeannie Little burst onto TV screens in the 70s, and it wasn't long before she became a household name, a Gold Logie winner, and a favourite amongst many Australians. With her distinctive voice, she had outrageous clothes and a great sense of humour. She won over audiences for many, many years. Today, to talk to you for our celebrity profile, Jeannie Little, Kieran Carroll is a writer and director of Darling. It's the Jeannie Little Show. Hello.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having me on the program.
I'm assuming you're a fan?
Big fan. And it's been a great project to take on.
Tell me about your project.
Well, I'd been working with a Melbourne performer called Caroline Ferguson, and we'd done one other comedy show before with a fictional character, and then we decided we wanted to do something new. And I'd been, over the last 7 or 8 years, been concentrating on biographical plays. I've actually got a play about John Newcombe, which is going on in Sydney in mid-February, and I was sort of in this mode, I suppose, of looking at Australian history that wasn't so far back, and I was trying to think for Caroline, who could we pick that from the 1970s, because we're both sort of the same generation, and we just remembered Jeannie Little from the Mike Walsh show and being kids, and it just sort of being on in every household, and it just seemed to be a really good fit for her, and it's a very, very large story, so it sort of worked out both well on a couple of levels.
Tell us about her life.
Well, she had a very kind of humble beginnings. She was one of seven children, and her father left the family and disappeared when she was 2 years old, so she was brought up by a very, very stoic and loving mother, and her mother had an interest in fashion, but certainly there wasn't very much money in the house, and part of Jeannie's fashion inclinations were really shaped by her mother, because her mother kind of made do with very few garments and was always kind of recycling things, and that was a really big influence on Jeannie. And she started off doing things like, you know, working in the public service, and she used to like to say, you know, I served the coffee scrolls every morning. And she really sort of fell into a world of sort of 60s, you know, fashion and music in Sydney before meeting her husband Barry.
And that relationship with Barry is something that many people are aware of, because she would often mention him in TV shows and in skits and so forth. And I think even people who didn't know who he was almost became familiar with him.
I think that's absolutely right. And he was an interior designer, and she kind of knew him for a very long time a few years before they got married. She went overseas for a little while, and then when she came back to Sydney in the mid-60s, they married, and that's when her fashion career was allowed to blossom.
Her fashion was something that you can't escape in the best way possible. I was watching a TV segment about her, a report, and they were saying she was like the Lady Gaga of Australia before Lady Gaga was even a thing. But I don't know. I think I don't even know if you can just say that, because she had her own style.
Oh, look, I think she's more outrageous than Lady Gaga. I mean, some of the There was a couple of biographies written about Jeannie before. Her daughter, Katie Little, wrote a memoir, which some of your listeners might know, and that's come out quite recently, called Catch a Falling Star. And some of the dresses and some of the descriptions of the dresses in those books are great. Like, for example, I think some people might remember things from the Mike Walsh show where she wore one dress that was completely made out of toast. There was another dress that was a combination of kind of, you know, pizzas. She had this kind of pizza hat. Recycled garbage bags. There was one dress that was completely made out of coins. And she just would sort of be up all night, sort of, you know, drinking Lanchu tea. And she seemed to have this incredible kind of energy to be able to kind of just work and work and work.
In an interview with her daughter says, you know, I have memories of my childhood. It was so fun that we had the upstairs rooms in our four-story house. Dad's office was at the very bottom and Mum and I were at the top, and she would be in her room making all the costumes, her mum, Jeannie, and then next door the daughter would be doing her own little crafts and things, and said it was just such a magical thing, and that her mother was just is so smart and could create such amazing things.
I think this is the funny thing with her sort of transition into TV, that kind of absolutely happened by accident. And the story was that in 1974, Barry had various journalistic connections in Sydney, and one day they just needed somebody to fill in on a segment on the Mike Walsh show, and John Michael Housen was hosting the show that day, and he just sort of randomly said, oh, look, Jeannie can talk, she can just get on and do a couple of things and just, you know, fill in. And she went on, and the thing that she always said was, well, it wasn't really an act, darlings, it was just me, but people liked it. And from there, she just went into a whole nother world that was completely unexpected for her.
Here is a clip from the Mike Walsh show where she became very well known and, as he said, a regular. Here is Jeannie Little doing what she does, having a chat.
If everybody hasn't been getting a bang out of life, and, you know, just wear this hat and you get a few extra. And this is Bangers and Mash.
Let's hear it for the Bangers.
Because I part this with a special piper and everything. Someone out there is crying. I don't know whether she thinks it's awful or wonderful.
She's just hungry,
aren't you? Oh, you poor thing. And see, I sort of made all mashed potatoes and everything, and I especially left some of the eyes in it so I can see out of the back of my head. I try to make it look like ermine started with emeralds.
It looks
but
something.
It's only peas.
One of the things with the sausages.
Darling, are they still warm?
Well, no.
Well, I really did cook them this morning in case you felt like one. Everyone feels like a sausage. You want one, really?
No, thanks, Jeannie.
Oh, all right, darling. Oh, I'm going to pizza. All right.
There we are. Outrageous to some, but it made her very popular.
One of the things that's really, really hard to believe about the Mike Walsh show now is that at its height, it had up to 5 million viewers, which in the 1970s in Australia is absolutely huge. And I suppose it's sort of a sign that there were so many more one-income households and people were home during the day. It was incredible that it had that many viewers for that amount of time. And I think when I think back to my childhood and Caroline Ferguson's the same, I think about those kind of personalities that were on, say, you know, Blankety Blanks, from, you know, Graham Kennedy to Ugly Dave Gray to Nolene Brown to Noel Ferrier, and they left a sort of a huge imprint, I think, on Generation X childhoods.
If anyone wants to add to this conversation, if you're listening now and you thought, oh, I was a big fan, or I saw this show, I saw her do this live, or remember this, please share it, 1300 222 891. Or even if you have a question for Kieran Carroll, who joins you today, you can also text in 0437 774 774. Kieran Carroll is a writer and director of Darlin'. It's the Jeannie Little Show with performances in Melbourne and Sydney in February. Kieran, I did mention that some people found it outrageous at the time. I mean, you know, maybe today's standards, it's not so crazy and outrageous, but I wonder in the 70s, how was she perceived by audiences?
Well, I think that she was very influenced by a lot of drag shows and a lot of the entertainment in Sydney that was kind of happening around Darlinghurst and Paddington. And, of course, that was back then, that was a very, very marginal world in Australia, unless you were kind of in, you know, small pockets of Sydney and, you know, possibly Melbourne, but not really, mainly Sydney. So it's something where she took a real lot of kind of fashion and sort of performance from a marginalised world, but brought that into kind of a mainstream Australia. And I think a lot of people were probably, you know, driven a little bit mad by that voice. And one show we did a couple of months ago, I went to the bar after the show, and this one person said, "Oh, well, look, the show's very, very well done, but honestly, you know, she was driving me mad. That voice was driving me mad 40 years ago. I thought, oh, God, why would I want to hear it again?"
And was she aware that that's how people were seeing her? I mean, it's, I guess you work with it as well.
Well, I think the voice, she says one thing where when she was 2 years old, I don't think this is true, but when she was 2 years old, her father took her to the pub, and she got dropped on the concrete and hit her head. And she said, you know, that accident as a baby was what gave her the voice.
Well, I think of people like Fran Dresser as well, who has that distinctive voice, and they make it their calling card.
It becomes it absolutely becomes their calling card. And it's, I think, you know, that the speed with which she talks and the way that sort of, you know, she extends the vowels are one thing, but the voice is just so absolutely distinctive. And I think it sort of, I mean, it kind of came on like maybe some mothers do have them, like, you know, Frank Spencer would be another voice where you just, once you've heard it once, you just don't forget it.
When did she win the Gold Logie?
1976, and Burt Lancaster presented her with the Logie, and this was a sort of a very funny moment in Australian TV history, because, of course, we know with, you know, Logies, their people voted, and she said that she got sort of a rather cool reception after winning, and that was mainly because of that thing of, you know, not going to acting school or not sort of, you know, spending years and years learning her craft, and that she just kind of, you know, arrived and sort of just naturally fell into the TV world and was just such a huge success. And so she said she got sort of a fairly cool reception from that great victory.
She went on to do cabaret shows as well. One that people, you know, have much loved is the Marlene Dietrich one. What other shows did she do on the scene?
Yeah, well, this is the whole next stage. In the 80s, after the Mike Walsh show, you know, she had her own show briefly on Channel 7 during the day, but she said, you know, it was at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and why would anybody be watching it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when the kids are all being picked up from school? And then she went from there into a completely different world, and she started off auditioning for Jerry's Girls, and so she sang with Marsha Hines in that show, and that was enormous. And then she and Barry decided that she should go off into sort of solo mode, and for 10 years between sort of the mid-80s and the mid-90s, she had Marlena, a tribute to Dietrich, and that toured Australia very widely. It went to America, and she really kind of learnt to sing in many, many different ways, and she went from that to another show about Marilyn Monroe, which was a big success, and then she also sang for Princess Diana and Prince Charles at the Opera House when they came out for the bicentenary. So she really went on to a very large career in a world away from that, you know, zany TV character that we came to know.
And she was doing a double act, being a mum at the same time and often bringing her daughter Katie to a lot of these gigs and things.
Yes, well, Katie spent a lot of her childhood in the studios at Channel 9, and in her memoir she talks a little bit about being good friends with Gary McDonald's daughter, who she went to school with, and they had that entertainment childhood. I think, you know, came with its difficulties. She was an only child, but she sort of had a very, very funny time behind the studios there at Channel 9, and then, yes, and then spent time on the road with her mother as well.
It would have been a very interesting scene there for Jeannie, being a woman in the arts scene in Australia, performing and on TV. Has she spoken much about that, what it was like for her?
Look, I think, like a lot of women in that period, I think you had to be, you know, very strong and very resilient. I mean, I think she had, you know, always really good support from Barry all the way through, both in the TV world, and then once she went into the cabaret world, he was very much like a producer, and he would also be kind of he was very technically minded, so he looked after lights and sound. So she always had him, and I think she had, you know, very, very good management. But certainly, I think for many of those women on both sides, from, you know, TV or in the show business world, it was very, very difficult. And Renee Geyer, for example, talks a lot about that in the 70s, of the way of being, you know, ripped off and exploited. And I think, yes, it was very, very difficult, and you needed strength.
Do you think she split audiences? You know, there was no kind of in between. People either loved her or were turned off completely.
Look, I think definitely in the 70s, and I find this now with the show that we're doing. There's an enormous female following, and look, that comes from the Mike Walsh show, which had enormous enormous female audience, and I think probably a lot of husbands of that era were kind of driven mad by The Voice. But I think now a lot of men, you know, really, really like Jeannie Little for not only kind of what she achieved, but they probably have a little bit more, well, I say, you know, tolerance and understanding of what she was doing.
Then she moved after the cabaret stage of career into being a fixture on talk shows, and Beauty and the Beast comes to mind, and she'd often be giving her opinion on these shows. Can you talk about this part of the career?
Yes, well, this is where things take a little bit of a dip health-wise, and towards the end of the Marilyn Monroe show, which is in the, we're up to kind of the mid-2000s by this stage, she doesn't realise it, but Barry's saying to her, "Jeannie, you're forgetting some lines." And she's saying, "Oh, am I? And she talks about how there was a launch of her biography, and she kind of didn't know at one point what she was kind of doing. And this kind of then, and Beauty and the Beast is kind of at the beginning of this too, where she's diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And yes, so it's been a very, very long illness. You know, she's still alive, But she's had Alzheimer's for an awful long time.
And her daughter, Katie, has spoken about this very publicly, how much of a struggle that has been for Jeannie and the family.
Yes. So Barry became unwell too. He passed on last year, but Jeannie has been in a nursing home for some years. And, yes, there's a difficult time within the family. They have this beautiful house in Paddington in Sydney, which you mentioned, on with all the different split levels, and the house gets sold and they move into a kind of a smaller place, and then Katie's kind of faced with all those difficulties that, you know, sons and daughters get in middle age of how best to deal with the parents and the onset of illness, and it becomes a big challenge for her.
She has spoken about how her mum, what state she's in now. I mean, she's not able to, you know, get up and dance and sing and all those things people know her for.
No, it's one of those terrible diseases, of course, where people can still be physically okay and they can be, eating okay and things like that. But, yes, she seems to have very little memory of anything.
On the text, did she ever sell her clothes?
Yeah, well, there was a fashion boutique that she had in Sydney in the 60s and 70s, kind of before Mike Walsh took off. And, yes, people often ordered things. And so I think some of those garments were appearing. Things that she wore as kind of one-offs on TV, no, I think they weren't. But prior to that, yes, she made many, many things for numerous people.
With Jeannie's life and experiences of Alzheimer's, do you find that it's bringing, well, from what you've heard and spoken about with family or maybe heard from audiences, do you think Jeannie's experiences with Alzheimer's is maybe touching audiences and people and the public in a different way, and maybe help? I guess you can't say helping the cause, but maybe gaining support for Alzheimer's foundations and organisations?
Yes, look, Katie's very linked in with the Alzheimer's Foundation, and I think part of her idea of writing that memoir was very much to tell sort of an entertaining and very, very funny story in many, many ways about what it's like to have a mother like Jeannie Little, a complete one-off. But certainly, in reading that book, and I think a lot of people have read it, and it's sold very well. It has brought a further awareness of Alzheimer's and the ways in which people deal with it, or families deal with it, for very, very long periods of time. And I know myself, I had an aunt who she had it for about a decade. And the way that people go to nursing homes and see their loved ones in such a different and more difficult light than when they truly knew them.
Just to mention too, if you want to know more about dementia, or maybe somebody in your family is living with it, or yourself, you're feeling, you know, the onsets are there, you can contact Dementia Australia, dementia.org.au, and also the number, they have a helpline, 1800 100 500. That number again is 1800 100 500. On ABC Radio Overnights, talking about the life and career of Jeannie Little. A little side message for you, Kieran. Justin just texted in and said, I went to school with Kieran. We both backed the winner of the Oakley Plate. Justin Hanley, so.
That's really, really funny. Yes, I went to a Catholic boys' school in Melbourne, and Justin Hanley and I, in 1982, we went to the grand final. Richmond played Carlton, and it was 50 cents to go if you were under 15. And you stood 50 cents if you're under 15. I remember we took a milk crate in each to the to the MCG. We were 14, and we got there at 8:30 in the morning, and we were so tired by the time the game started at 2:30. I didn't really care if Richmond won or Carlton won. We had to sit through, had to stand through about 6 hours of other games before, but 50 cents to go to the grand final in 1982 if you're under 15. That's a pretty good deal.
That is a good deal, and it just goes to show as well, you never know who's listening to you on the radio, by the way. Old friends and blasts from the past. Hello, Bob.
It's a bit of a blast from the past for me. I'm suffering a bit of Parkinsonia and that things, but I can remember the 70s and 80s well, and I used to work at Balmain, and the Balmain people loved Jeannie Little. That was their own person. I'm pretty sure I've got it right that she grew up in Balmain. If you knocked Jeannie to them, they were very unhappy people.
Yeah, so they were fans. You're either with them or not.
Oh, everybody liked her there. Her pitch of her voice was a little high for me, but I would never have said it to anybody I worked with.
Yeah, I think Bob, Balmain had a sort of a combination of that sort of a working class era, a working class suburb in that period, but also it had a kind of a lot of writers living there, and it was a bohemian haunt too. I mean, David Williamson lived around that area, and Frank Morehouse, the novelist, and I think that area is a really great combination for Jeannie of sort of, bohemia and sort of her working class origins as well.
My friends lived next to Henry Zepps, and there was lots of actors there too, and you'd go to a local pub in Balmain, just a working class pub, you'd see all sorts of actors, and you see them now, but the tone of Balmain has changed a bit now. A lot of the working class people have sold out for huge money and moved mainly to Concord, would you believe?
Yes, that's right.
But it's still a nice suburb. I still have fond memories of it, and Junie's part of the fond memories, I think.
And what about now, Bob, when you look at, someone like Jeannie, and we're exploring her life and her career, and as she is now, how does that resonate with you?
I think I'm going through similar things. So I used to be a professional boxer. I've got myself a good specialist, Dr. Simon Lewis. I think you've got to get yourself a real good person, and you've got to relate to you. This bloke's a bit of a knockabout fella. I relate to him, so I'm happy to go and visit him. He talks to me and whatnot.
Because it's a big time, and it can be a scary time too. There's a lot, I'm sure, a lot of emotions.
I'm 64, but I've put a lot of things in place, for my kids and that, so if I lose my mind, I'll do it. But I'll tell you the funny thing. I may not remember what I had for breakfast, but the 1970s and 80s, they're crystal clear, like they happened yesterday to me.
Well, Bob, they're probably more interesting as well than what you had for breakfast. They're the good things to remember.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Well, Bob, thank you for sharing that. And, we're touching on, her life and also her experiences with Alzheimer's, and I know there would be so many people listening now who are living through it themselves or have family members, and to have someone who they know so well and can relate to even just by knowing who she is, I'm sure it would mean a lot.
I think you have to mention, sometimes it's a bit hurtful for my kids and other people to see people deteriorate a bit. They get sorry, and you look at them and say, I'm not to be made, you shouldn't feel too sorry about it. It's one of those things that just happens. You're unlucky. But I feel sorry for the people that are supporting people like myself, sort of.
Oh, Bob, I'm sure they would love. If you're loved, and then it's just what you do. It's part of life, isn't it? You care for those you love. Bob, thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks a lot. No,
Bob from Greenacre there, thank you. Really, really very much appreciate you calling in. Beryl in Orange is also here. Hello, Beryl. And Beryl, what about Jeannie Little? What are your memories of her and her career?
Oh, she's beautiful. I remember her in the 70s and 80s, and she was always saying, darling. She was so sweet, and, oh, she was beautiful. I just remember her. I'll never forget her, and, you know, I love her, and I just love her.
She's quite a memorable character, that's for sure. Beryl from Orange, thank you so much for calling. Joining you also is Kieran Carroll, writer and director of Darling. It's the Jeannie Little Show with performances coming up in Melbourne and Sydney in February. Did Jeannie ever have any, you know, maybe some controversial or awkward moments in her career that maybe you're including in the show?
I think on the Mike Walsh show there was one moment I do include on the Mike Walsh show, which was kind of awkward. In 1981, Bob Hawke became the host of the show for a day, and so this is really, really hard to believe now, isn't it, that that a politician of that stature would sort of just, you know, go on a show and become the host.
Yeah, it's like seeing Scott Morrison on The Project. I don't know if it would happen these days.
For an episode, I mean, you realise this with politicians. I think about this with the Barry McKenzie films, and, you know, at the end of the film there where Dame Edna and Barry McKenzie, you know, get off the plane, and there's Gough Whitlam and Margaret. And, you know, if you said to one of those politicians now, well, look, there's a sort of comedy film being made. Have you got a day just to go out and do some filming for it? It's such a different world. one of the you know, the great episodes that Jeannie talked about was the day that Bob Hawke became host, and the two of them ran the show together. And one of Jeannie's jokes that day was that the Minister for Employment at that time was a chap by the name of Ian Viner, and I think, you know, they said, you know, unemployment was 5 or 6% or something like that. And Jeannie said, oh, you know, Robert. She called him Robert all the way through, but sometimes she was just calling him Darling or Hawkey. And she said, Robert, you know, it's easy to solve unemployment. It's easy to solve unemployment. Just make everybody go to school until they're 35.
Nothing, done nothing bad with that. Sounds and makes perfect sense. Kieran Carroll, writer and director of Darling. It's the Jeannie Little Show. Again, can you tell us when those performances are on?
Yeah, so we're opening at the Butterfly Club in Melbourne on the 27th of January until February 1st, and you're able to get tickets by going to the butterflyclub.com, or you can give the theatre a call on 03 9663 8107, and it's the Butterfly Club in Melbourne. I'm sorry, Lisa, I might have confused you there. I have got a show on at the Glen Street Theatre in Sydney on the 16th and 17th of February, but that's about John Newcombe.
Oh, well, listen, hey.
And actually there is a great story in the book, another Jeannie Little memoir, not Katie's, but one that was released in the 80s, about the day that John Newcombe and Jeannie Little played tennis together. And in that sort of very kind of carry-on sense of humour, Jeannie said, oh, John Newcombe was such a charmer on those legs. Ooh-ah, but the only trouble was I just couldn't hit his balls. So he just said, oh, don't worry about it, Jeannie. Let's just go to the bar and have a Cinzano.
Florence in Petersham, hello.
Oh, good morning. I saw Jeannie Little perform as Marlene Dietrich at the Burwood, which is a suburb Sydney, at the RSL. And her performance, you just thought you were looking at Marlene Dietrich.
Mm.
I've never seen, and I come from a show business family. My father was Audible, and my brother's on the Tivoli. So like Jeannie, my first 18 years was with Puppets, Magic and Vaudevillian. And she was just beautiful as Marlene Dietrich.
Oh, you can see she would look like her, the eyebrows, the face, the structure.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when she sang, she left her voice away and she just sang exactly like Marlene. Yes.
Oh.
The lamplight. I can still see her. And I just thought, well, I didn't have to go to Paris to see Marlene.
Oh, she brought it to you. Oh, Florence, thank you for that. Keep your memories coming through. You know, you can call up 1300 222 891 or send through a text 0437 774 774. Kieran Carroll, writer and director, thank you again for taking the time out today and chatting about Jeannie Little.
Oh, it's been great, Lisa. It's been great. And I'm so glad that, you know, it's been great to do a character that sort of, you know, touched so many people in the past, and how her story now is touching a lot of people in a different way.
On ABC Radio.